Shalom. This is Billy Brim and the Voice of One Witness radio broadcast coming to you today from Prayer Mountain in the Ozarks. Now, I am trusting that you're listening to this in your car radio because you're on your way to pray at 12, from 12 to 1 at your county courthouse. I'll be in New York City today near the 9/11 happening, and we're believing that we'll have people praying all across America for an awakening. An awakening. An awakening to God. I'm going to talk to you today about George Washington Carver, a man who saw this awakening coming. And this was the last dot on our recent trip to Tulsa, where the Lord spoke to me so much about the Tulsa area, Kenneth Hagin, Oral Roberts, the students who are coming in, the great move of God that's been there, the move of God that's coming. Now, on our way home, I told you that in the car, we were listening to a recording of what had been a roadshow interview earlier of Dr. Mark Rutland, the new president of Oral Roberts University. And as we listened to it, we heard them talk about what was an interview they had done with Oral Roberts himself just a few weeks earlier. And so I listened to that. And in that interview, Brother Roberts was talking about his life. And he said he never did anything without he heard God tell him what to do. When he prayed for the sick people, he said some of them got healed, some of them didn't. But with the people, the Lord would show him what to do, tell him what to do. And he has a book called The Ultimate Voice. God's still, and the title's The Ultimate Voice, and then this is the subtitle. God's Still Small Voice. It's the clearest, loudest voice you'll ever hear. Most of the times, Brother Robert said, when he spoke, I didn't expect it. Other times, I was seeking him. But I determined I would live on his voice, and I have. Kenneth Hagin knew how to listen to the voice of God. I edited the book for him, How You Can Be Led by the Spirit of God. And George Washington Carver, the man who talked to flowers, heard God's voice through the beautiful creation that he made. Now, as we're driving back on I-44 from Tulsa, back up to Branson on Sunday, Brenda said to me, she's driving my car, and it was rather early in the day, and she said, I think we need gas. Well, I looked down at the gauge, and I know how far my car would go, and I had thought, well, we could make it on to Springfield. But I didn't say that to her. I said, well, whatever you think. And she turned off the road and got some fuel in the car, and then she drove out from the filling station, and we used to call it filling stations. And I said, Brenda, you turned the wrong way. She said, no, I didn't, Mom. I said, yes, you are. You're not on I-44. You're on 71. And she's usually really good with directions. And so we saw that we couldn't turn around anywhere close, you know, so we had to keep driving. And pretty soon we saw these signs that said, George Washington Carver's Museum, National Monument, Diamond, Missouri. And it was rather early in the day, and I said, let's just go there. It had been years since I'd been there. I went with Shelley. Oh, I'm sure that it's probably 15 more years ago. And her children were small. Now they're grown. But we drove, and it was a gorgeous day. It was more like an autumn day than it was an August day. And we pulled up to the beautifully kept grounds. I think that Carver Farm was about 270 acres or so. And we drove in front of the museum. It was like I had remembered it from before. We walked into the museum and we watched, first of all, a video, a DVD, now they call them. And it was George Washington Carver. George Washington Carver is the name of that DVD. We watched it, and it really emphasizes, I was so glad that they did it in this place, the spirituality of his life. there was another video which we bought. We bought both these videos. They had them for sale, and we're making them available to you this week. I tell you, it's just a blessing to watch them and to see this great man of God. The first one is George Washington Carver, and the other one is Carver, Man of Vision. If you only want one of them, I suggest you get George Washington Carver. It's more of a biography. But they're both very good, and you can see shots of him in it. We're offering each of them for $20 each, plus postage. So we went in, and of course the atmosphere is set. We look all around, and they have his sayings everywhere. I saw this saying carved in a rock in the front as you walked in. And it said, "Don't be concerned if others don't agree with you. Just make sure you're right." How can you make sure you're right? By Proverbs 3:6. "In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths." That was one of the scriptures he lived by. He said that he lived by three. He lived by lots of scriptures, one of them about the seeds. But there were three that he particularly walked in and wrote of in a letter to a young man from the director of YMCA. YMCA is not just a fun song to sing at basketball games. YMCA was Young Men's Christian Association, and it was founded on very great Christian principles. And writing to the head of that group in the early days, he said, "There are three scriptures that I use in my life particularly. One of them, Proverbs 3:6, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. One of them, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And Psalm 119:18, open my eyes that I may see wondrous things from your law," or your word. And he saw and heard the voice of God. As you go throughout and you watch the museum and you see how he was a little slave boy. Actually, his mother was a slave. He was born right at the end of the Civil War. And his mother and he were carried off by bushwhackers that came by the Moses Carver farm. And Moses Carver, a white man who had bought his mother when she was just a young girl, he didn't believe in slavery, but they needed some help around the house, and he had done that. And then she had two sons. Their father was from a neighboring farm, and he was killed early on in a logging accident. Before George Washington Carver was born, but the bushwhackers came and carried off this little slave girl and her baby son, infant son. And Mr. Carver sent some people after them. They never found her, but they found the baby, and he was sick with whooping cough. But they brought him back home, and the Carvers raised those two boys like as if they were their own sons. And since George Washington Carver was a sickly little child, he got to spend lots of time in the house with Mrs. Carver. And then he got to roam the woods. And in those woods, he particularly saw the wonder of God in everything. And one of the things you get to do when you go to that place near Diamond, Missouri, they have walks for you to walk back through the woods and over the creeks, and where he found his little flowers and where he learned so much about God. Now, I have a book here. This is a book of his letters, and it tells about when he was born again. I bought it at the place. It's called George Washington Carver in His Own Words. And in this letter, he tells about believing in divine guidance and using those scriptures we just gave you. And he said, "I was just a mere boy when converted, hardly 10 years old. There isn't much of a story to it. God just came into my heart one afternoon while I was left alone in the loft of our big barn, while I was shelling corn to carry to the mill to be ground into meal. A dear little white boy, one of our neighbors about my age, came by one Saturday morning, and in talking and playing, he told me he was going to Sunday school tomorrow. I was eager to know what Sunday school was. He said they sang hymns and prayed. I asked him what prayer was and what they said. I don't remember what he told me, but I only remember that as soon as he left, I climbed up into the loft, knelt down by the barrel of corn, and prayed as best I could. I do not remember what I said. I only recall that I felt so good, and I prayed several times before I quit. My brother and I were the only colored children in that neighborhood, and of course we couldn't go to church or Sunday school. But that was my simple conversion, and I've tried to keep the faith. And then in his simple ways, and with that woods as his church, he learned to know God. He later went on to live with a very godly couple in Neosho while he went to school. And this lady taught him so much and gave him a Bible. And he learned to talk to flowers. He's the man that learned the secret of the peanut and saved the South, literally saved the South. He would find marvelous things, like he found a beautiful blue color, an Egyptian clay that had been lost for centuries, this blue. But the Lord showed him where it was. The first time the Lord ever showed him anything, he had a dream. He really wanted a pocket knife. And the Lord showed him a dream of a cornfield, of Mr. Carver's cornfield. He saw three stalks of corn, and he saw a watermelon half-eaten, gouged out. He saw half of a watermelon leaned up against three stalks of corn and a pocket knife in it. And he couldn't wait the next morning. He got there, and everything he had seen was in actuality. Now, he would talk. He was a great man of God. He talked to flowers, but he talked to Mr. Creator. He would look at the flower, and he would speak to Mr. Creator, and God would speak to him. Now, I'm going to read you something that is in this book, The Man Who Talks to Flowers. We're offering it this week for $3. He was being driven home from having spoken in Minneapolis and had a marvelous speaking time that night. And then he had gone the next day, and he was going to the station. And he said in the car, "Last night as I rode to the auditorium, I was holding a little white flower in my hand all the way. And in the silence while we rode, I was talking to it, and it was talking to me. It told me some wonderful things, and the flowers have never failed to tell me the truth. It told me that there is going to be a great spiritual awakening in the world. And it's going to come from people up here, from people connected with you and me, from plain simple people who know, not merely believe, but actually know that God answers prayer. It's going to be a great revival of Christianity, not a revival of religion, a revival of true Christianity. It's going to rise from the layman." And then later on, he spoke again of this great spiritual awakening. He wrote to one of his best friends, "This third front, a group of people gathered together, is to unite all praying people in the beginning of that great spiritual awakening, which I prophesied 5 years ago. I will be with you in spirit in Washington." He didn't make it because he passed away. But just before he passed away, he said, "There's going to be a united people praying for an awakening." Today, folks, people are on their courthouse steps praying for an awakening. And I'm reading about it. Get our offers this week. You'll want the two DVDs. You'll want the Book of His Life. You'll want the other things we've offered. Just call us at 1-800-972-3447. Call us at 1-800-972-3447. This is Billy Brim saying Shabbat Shalom.